Welcome to Tim Bray's Ongoing Podcast, which is an audio version of a selection of the articles on my blog, also called Ongoing. I'm Tim Bray. You can find the blog at tbray.org. This is pretty well the same story you'd experience by reading it, but some people would rather listen. Here we go. Now, housekeeping note, it's really warm today, and I record these in my boat, and I've got the windows open, so you may hear some waterfront sound in the background. I hope that's not a problem. Now, this piece was originally published a long time ago, January 19th, 2020, but then I just updated it this week for reasons that will become obvious as I narrate. It's entitled Decarbonization. We're trying to decarbonize our family as much as we can. We're not kidding ourselves that this will move any global warming needles, but sharing the story might help a little bit. Updated mid-May 2021, with a bit of progress. No more gas vehicles, heat pumps in production. Those who worry a lot about the climate emergency and who wonder what they might do about it are advised to have a look at, here's a link, To Fix Climate Change, Stop Being a Techie and Start Being a Human by Paul Johnson, until recently a co-worker at Amazon. It's coldly realistic, noting that the climate emergency is not your fault and that you can't fix it. Only radical, large-scale global political action will. And his recommendation is that you find an organization promoting such change that meets your fancy. And there are lots. Paul provides a helpful list. And join it. And here's a little graph of per capita greenhouse gas emissions in a bunch of countries in decreasing order of significance. United States, Russia, Japan, Europe, China, and so on and so forth. They're per capita, not total. So such intensity of change is possible. It happened in the middle of the 20th century when faced with the threat of global fascism. Governments unceremoniously fixed wages, told businesses what they could and couldn't do, and sent millions of young men off to die. It's not just possible, it's inevitable that this level of effort will happen again when the threat level becomes impossible to ignore. We will doubtless have to conscript en masse to fight floods and fires and plagues, which, however, is much better than attacking positions defended by machine guns. The important thing is that it happen sooner rather than later. Thus, evangelism is probably the most important human activity just now, which is why people like Greta Thunberg are today the most important people in the world. So here's a modest proposal, and it involves the abbreviation DECARB. Decarbonize has four syllables, and decarbonization, six. I propose we replace both the noun and the verb with DECARB, which has only two. Mind you, it's used in the cannabis community as shorthand for decarboxylation, and I have a link to whatever that is for the potheads, but I bet the world stoners would be happy to donate their two syllables to the cause of saving the planet. Anyhow, I'm going to start using DECARB, if only because of the typing it saves. So, why personal decarb, then? Well, it feels good, and, more important, it sends a message. At some point, if everybody knows somebody who's decarbing, it will help bring the Earth's Defenders message home, making it real and immediate, not just another titillation in their Facebook feed. There's a corollary. Decarbing is, by and large, not unpleasant. The things we need to give up, I think, are not strongly linked to happiness, and some decarb life choices turn out to be pretty pleasing. Caveats and cautions. It's important that I acknowledge that I'm a hyper-over-entitled, well-off, healthy, straight, white male. Decarbing is going to be easier for me than it is for most, because life is easier for me. I'm willing to throw money at decarb problems before that becomes economically sensible, because I have the money to throw. But I hope, and on the evidence, believe that pretty well every one of these directions will become increasingly economically plausible across a wider spectrum of incomes and lifestyles. Because of my privileged position, and because the target is moving, I'm not going to talk much about the costs of the decarb steps, and I'm not even sure it'd be helpful. These things depend a lot on where in the world you live, and when you start moving forward. Now, for a survey of decarb opportunities. Decarb. Get gas out of your car. Obviously, fossil fuels are a big part of the problem, and automobiles make it worse because they are so appallingly inefficient at turning the available joules into kilometers of travel, most less than 35%. On the other side of the coin, electric vehicles are a win because they don't care what time of day or night you charge them up, so they're a good match for renewable energy sources. Our family progress report? Good. For good news, check out my Jaguar diary I bought in 2019, an all-electric battery electric Jaguar I-Pace, and it's been very successful. I smile a little bit every time I cruise past a gas station. I'm here to tell you that automotive decarb isn't only righteous, it's fun. Decarb. Get yourself out of cars. Last time I checked, the carbon load presented by a car is only half fuel, more or less. The rest is manufacturing. So we need to build fewer cars, which means finding other ways to get places. Public transit and micromobility, that's a link, are the obvious alternatives. There are good alternatives, too, if you can manage them. If you haven't tried a modern e-bike, you really owe that to yourself. It's a life changer. I think e-bikes are better alternatives than scooters along almost every axis: safety, comfort, speed, and weather imperviousness. And public transit is fine too, but there are lots of places where it's really not a credible option. Now, there are times when you need to use a car, but not necessarily to own one. It isn't rocket science. If we share cars, then we'll manufacture fewer. There are taxis and car shares like Car2Go and Friends. Car2Go seems to have faded. I missed that in the update. Uber and so on are just taxi companies with apps, and money-losing ones at that. Their big advantage is that your ride is partly paid for by venture capital investors who are going to lose their money, so it's not sustainable. The car share picture varies from place to place. Here in Vancouver, we have Evo and Modo. Those are both links. If you're in Vancouver, check them out. They're great. Family progress report? Pretty good. Since I got my e-bike, I've put 3,000 kilometers on it, and I remain entirely convinced this is the future for a whole lot of people. I just don't want to drive to work anymore, and I resent it when family logistics force me to. And here's a funny picture of my e-bike parked in front of the Jaguar. My wife works from home, and my son takes a bus or a skateboard to college. My daughter still gets driven to school occasionally, and in some combinations of lousy weather and an extra heavy load, but uses her bike and the bus, and will do so increasingly as the years go by. I used to take the train quite a bit, but the combination of COVID and leaving Amazon means it's only rarely a good alternative to bicycling. We use car share a lot for going to concerts and so on, well, we did before COVID, because they avoid the parking hassle, and when we need a van to schlep off around for a couple of hours. Now, due to the hyper-over-entitledness noted above, we have the good fortune to live in a central part of the city, and all these commute options are just like a half hour or less. This part of decarb is way harder in the suburbs, and that's where many just have to live for purely economic reasons. Decarb. Get fossil fuels out of the house. Houses run on some combination of electricity and fossil fuels, mostly natural gas, but some heating oil. The biggest win in this space is what Amory Lovins, memorably christened negawatts, batteries energy saved just by eliminating wastage. In practical terms, this means insulating your house so it's easier to heat and or cool, and switching out incandescent lights for modern LEDs. Ubiquitous LEDs are a new thing, but they're not the only new thing. For heating and cooling, heat pumps are increasingly attractive. Their performance advantage over traditional furnaces, complicated. By the way, there's a bunch of links in this text to backing evidence. Wikipedia says the proper message is coefficient of performance, often abbreviated COP, the ratio of useful heat movement into work input. Obviously, a traditional furnace can't do better than 1.0. A heat pump's COP is at 3 or 4 at a moderate temperature, like 10 degrees centigrade, and decreases to 1.0 at around 0 centigrade. So this is a win in a place like Vancouver, but maybe not if you're in Minnesota or Saskatchewan or Vladivostok. Heat pump technology also works for your hot water tank. Another newish tech, popular in parts of Europe for some time now, is induction cooking. It's more efficient than gas cooking, which is in turn more efficient than a traditional electric cooktop. For those of you who abandoned electric for gas years ago because it was more responsive, think again. Induction reacts just as fast as gas and boils water way faster. Note that all these technologies are electric, so your decarb advantage depends on how clean your local power is. Here in the Pacific Northwest, where it's mostly hydroelectric, it's a no-brainer. But even if you've got relatively dirty power, the efficiency advantage of the latest tech might put you ahead on the carbon count. Also bear in mind that your local electricity will likely be getting cleaner. If you track large-scale energy economics, the cost of renewables, even without subsidies, even with the need for storage, has fallen to the point where it not only makes sense to use it for new demand, in some jurisdictions it makes sense to shut down high-carbon-generating infrastructure in favor of newer, better alternatives, even taking into account the cost of building them. Family progress report? Well, good, but we had a 20-year-old gas range, which was starting to scare us from time to time, for example, when the broiler came on with a boom that rattled the windows. So early this year, we retired it in favor of a GE Café range, model CCHS900P2MS1. It makes the old gas stove feel like caveman technology. Quieter, just as fast, insanely easier to clean, and safer. On the other hand, it requires cookware with significant ferrous content, which yours maybe doesn't have. We had to replace a few of ours. And one thing that really hurts, it doesn't work with a wok, so we stir fry a whole lot less. And I got a picture of it, a modern induction range, and it has a picture of an old cast iron frying pan making pancakes. Now, as for those negawatts, we live in a wooden arts and crafts style house built in 1912 and have successfully updated the insulation and doors and windows here and there over the years to the point where it's a whole lot more efficient than it was. Late last year, we went after the last poorly insulated corner of the house and found ourselves spending several thousand dollars on asbestos remediation. Also in early 2020, we installed a Mitsubishi heat pump and a heat pump-based hot water tank. This turns out, in 2021 in Western Canada, to be at least as expensive, possibly quite a bit more, than heating the house with gas was. Also, modern furnaces, compared to the decade-old boxes they replaced, want to pump more air and pump it gently. There's one bedroom that we just couldn't get properly ducted without a major house rebuild, and it's kind of cold now. Another downside is that the tech isn't fully debugged. The thermostat that came with the thing is really primitive, and we haven't been able to make a modern one work with it. Having said that, when the furnace is on, it's a whole lot quieter and gentler than what it replaced. One consequence is that we turned off the natural gas coming into the house, which makes us feel good on the decarb front. And then there's the earthquake issue. Where we live, we're overdue for the big one. And when it comes, if your house doesn't fall down on you, another bad outcome is a natural gas leak blowing you to hell. Decarb. Fly less. Yeah, the carbon load from air travel is bad. The first few electric airplanes are starting to appear, but nobody believes in electric long-haul flights anytime soon. Family progress report? Bad, used to be worse. For decades, as the public face of various technologies, I was an egregious sinner, always jetting off to this conference or that customer, always with the platinum frequent flyer card, often upgraded to business class. Since I parted ways with Google in 2014 and retreated into backroom engineering, then retirement, things have been better, but not perfect. We have family in New Zealand and Saskatchewan and take to the air at least annually. I haven't any notion of what proportion of in-flight carbon has business upstream, what proportion vacations, and what proportion love. I hope the planet can afford the latter and a few vacations. Of course, COVID slaughtered biz travel, and we don't yet know how much will come back. I can't imagine that anyone thinks it'll go 100% back to the way it was. Thank goodness. Decarb. Eat less meat. The numbers for agriculture's share of global carbon load are all over the place. I see figures from 9% to twice that. The UN Food and Agriculture Organization says global livestock alone accounts for 14.5% of all anthropogenic GHG emissions, so if the human population backed away from eating dead animals, it'd move the needle. Family progress report? Not that great, but improving. We eat more vegetarian food from year to year, especially now that my son cooks once or twice a week and generally declines to include meat in what he makes. I make progress, but slower. Not so much because meat is tasty and nutritionally useful, but because it's easy, less chopping and other prep required. In a culture that's chronically starved for time, this is going to be a heavy lift. Also, we've cut way back on beef, which is the worst single part of the puzzle. I think it's probably perfectly okay for a human to enjoy a steak or a burger, say, once a month. Decarb, random sins. You probably shouldn't have a motorboat, which we do. And if you do, you should probably use it sparingly, which we do. You probably shouldn't burn wood in the fireplace, which we do, and if you do, you should use it sparingly, which we do. And that's all, except for a little note at the bottom saying to be updated, which it already has been once, and probably will be again. So, that's all, folks.